Ainsley asked me to speak about some training that I had gone through this past summer on trauma. But before we jump into that, last week we talked about stress, and we all have stress in our lives, and finding time in our day to pause and in the midst of stress, just spend time with God. And so I just wanted to ask you guys, how did that go? Did you guys try it out? How was it identifying your stressful times and finding that place to be with God?
Wayne and I had a kind of a funny interaction. He texted me one morning and shared that he'd been thinking about stress, and he's like, I know I'm stressed out. I don't know what stress I have in my life. And I was like, really? And I typed him a big thing about, what about this, and what about this, and what about this, and what about this, like all these things that I know he has going on in his life.
She's trying to help calm him down.
Then he's like, oh, maybe. Thought that was, yeah, was kind of funny. Sometimes we're not the most objective about what's going on in our own lives.
It's easy to say, I'm stressed, but I don't know why. And it's hard to identify that sometimes.
Yeah, very.
Was anybody able to find a space or something they could do that was able to bring them back to God and kind of refocus?
I jumped out of an airplane.
That would bring me to God.
14,000 feet, we'll do it, screaming all the way.
Okay, so today I'm going to be talking about a new kind of stress, trauma. Over the summer, our school, our district actually, has started training our schools to be trauma-informed, and I was chosen to be a part of my school's team for our trauma-sensitive team. And so we went through a week-long training, and it was amazing. And I'm obsessed with all the information that I learned. I'm going to be sharing just a tidbit today of what I learned. So kind of going from stress, there are three different kinds of stress. There's good stress, which is meeting new people, going to school for the first time, your first day of a new job. It's exciting, but it's still stressful and you're anxious. Then there's tolerable stress. And this is things that are unavoidable, like death, moving to a new house, a natural disaster. And as long as you have a support system in place to help you process that, it won't traumatize you. And then there's the third kind that is called toxic stress. And repeated exposure to things like abuse, neglect, violence, poverty, substance abuse, repeated exposure to that and not having a support system will cause that to become a traumatic event in your life. And the more traumatic events in your life, the more detrimental it can be to your brain development and to how you react to things, and even your own physical health. So I learned a lot about our brains and that trauma affects our brains and it changes our brains. So I'm going to give you a little mini course on the brain, because we need to understand the brain in order to understand how trauma is affecting our brain. So I'm a teacher, so I drew a picture. I had to. So there are three parts of the brain that we're going to focus on. There's the prefrontal cortex, and this is the decision-making part of your brain. It analyzes data, it helps you learn, and it communicates with the hippocampus to make decisions. The hippocampus is right here, it's the purple one. It stores memories, good and bad memories, and it helps your prefrontal cortex make decisions. So if you got in a car accident, anytime you get in a car, you may be extra cautious, and that's stemming from your hippocampus having that bad memory of having the car accident. And then there is the amygdala. is a really fun word to say, and I'm really excited because I get to teach my kindergartners how to say amygdala this year. So the amygdala is your safety and survival instinct, and it's basically your flight, fight, or freeze response. It's anytime you're in danger, your amygdala kicks in. It's responsible for adrenaline and fear. And it can completely interrupt what your prefrontal cortex and your hippocampus are trying to do. So that's just a quick synopsis of the brain and the three parts. So people who have been exposed to trauma can have actually an enlarged amygdala if they've had too much trauma, just constantly exposed to it. It can be bigger than normal, which means kind of like what Lee was talking about last week with PTSD, instead of having a normal response to an everyday stressful situation, they're responding with, I'm in danger, I need to either fight my way out of it, I'm going to freeze and shut down, or I'm going to run. And so I've obviously seen this a lot in my classroom. And so this was really eye-opening for me to understand that it's not just students being disrespectful. It's not just a lack of parenting. It's they're literally trying to survive, and all they can focus on is, am I safe? And so I'm going to actually play a game with you guys. I'm really excited about this.
I told Lee about it, and he's really excited about it, too.
So I'm going to give each of you a block, because that's all I had at home. So we just need a small block. And we're actually going to get in groups of, like, six, eight, and you're going to stand in a circle. So we could have a circle here, we could have a circle here, and then a circle back there. So when I give you a block, just get in a circle with people.
Paul's likely to do this is about the informatics.
This is toxic. Toxic stress for Paul.
Toxic drama for Paul.
Hi. Have our circles. Okay, so I'm going to read a story, and every time you hear the word right, you're going to pass your object to the right. Every time you hear the word left, you are going to pass your object to the left. Are we ready?
We have three weaklings on our team.
Are we good? All right, here we go. One day, the Wright family decided to take a vacation. The first thing they had to decide was who would be left at home, since there was not enough room in the Wright family car for all of them. Mr. Wright decided that Aunt Linda Wright would be the one left at home. Of course, this made Aunt Linda Wright so mad that she left her all left. She was immediately yelling, "It will be a right cold day before I return." The Wright family now bundled up the children, Tommy Wright, Susan Wright, Timmy Wright, Shelly Wright, and got in the car and left. Unfortunately, as they turned out of the driveway, someone had left a trash can in the street, so they had to turn right around and stop the car. They told Tommy Wright to get out of the car and move the trash can so they could be going. Tommy took so long that they almost left him in the street. Once the Wright family got on the road, Mother Wright wondered if she had left the stove on. Father Wright told her not to worry. He had checked the stove, and she had not left it on.
We have extra pieces.
As they turned right at the corner, everyone started to think about other things they might have left at home. No need to worry now. They were off on a Wright-fine vacation. When they arrived at the gas station, Father
Wright put his gas in the car and discovered that he'd left his wallet at home. So Timmy Wright ran home to get the money that was left behind. After Timmy had left, Susie Wright started to feel sick. She left the car saying she had to throw up. This, of course, got Mother Wright's attention, and she left the car in a hurry. Shelley Wright wanted to watch Timmy get sick, so she left the car too. Father Wright was left with Tommy Wright, who was playing a game in the back seat. With all of this going on, Father Wright decided that this was not the right time to take a vacation. So he gathered all the family and left the gas station as quickly as he could. When he arrived home, he turned left into the driveway and said, "I wish the Wright family had never left the house today." Right?
Wow.
All right, you can sit down now. The story's over.
Were we supposed to have ended with the same piece you started with?
Did any of you end up with more pieces?
Oh, yeah, Christina obviously has one. Got it? Thank you.
Okay, so now I have a quiz. Now I have a quiz. What were the names of the Wright children?
Susie.
And? Susie. Tommy. You got two of them?
They were the Wright children.
They had names. What was Mother Wright worried she had left on?
The stove.
The stove. Good. What did Father Wright leave at home?
Money.
His Tommy. Wallet. Who started to feel sick?
Tom.
Susie.
Sure, Tom.
So this is what's going on in the brains of people who are dealing with trauma. They literally cannot focus on anything except surviving. You were focusing on left, right, left, right, left, right, but you had no clue what the story was actually saying. That's what's going on in their brains. How'd that make you guys feel?
Stressed.
Stressed? What about when I started asking the questions? And when I was like, hey, there's a quiz. You got to answer these questions. Did you panic a little? It's pretty crazy. As soon as we played this game in this training, I was like, holy cow. How many times have I asked my students to listen to a story and answer some questions? And they're like, I don't know. I don't remember. And I know that they were looking at me, but I'm like, why didn't you listen? And in my mind, it's they're being disrespectful. It's they're just trying to be obstinate and not do what I asked. But in reality, they're just trying to survive. And they're trying to make sure that they're safe. And so I thought that was a really good way to model what trauma does to our brains, how it can completely change what's going on and how we focus on things. So also in this training, we looked at something called the ACEs test, the ACEs study, which Lee has talked about before. The ACEs test is just something that you can take 10 questions to assess whether you have trauma or not. You've gone through any traumatic experiences. I'm not going to make us take it today. but one thing we were talking about in our training was it's not just those people over there that are dealing with trauma. It's a lot of people everywhere, a lot of people in this room, a lot of people we work with, a lot of the kids I work with. And it's everywhere, and it affects us, and it molds us, and it affects our decisions and how we respond. So how do we help people living with trauma? For me as a teacher, after I learned all this information, I actually got discouraged. I was like, well, what do we do? Like, you know, they go through these life events as a kid and it can drastically impact the choices they make as an adult. And sometimes so much trauma has happened to them before they even come into my classroom. It just felt so hopeless. And they just reinforced that having a support system in place for kids and adults who've gone through trauma is what gets them through it. There's not any, like, tests we can do on them. There's not any surgery or anything. It's just people going next to them, and living life with them. And so I've really had to adjust how I approach teaching. I've had to really adjust how I approach going up to a kid that is refusing to work. And instead of saying, why aren't you doing what I'm asking? It's, hey, what's going on? Do you need help? Is something bothering you? And sitting down and teaching them, I see that you're angry. And it's okay to be angry about that thing. I would be angry too. Here's how we respond. I, a lot of times, very easily blame the parents of my students. And say, oh, they just have horrible parents. These parents just don't care. These parents aren't respectful. These parents have no idea what it's like to raise a child healthily. And I'm not an expert. I only have a two-year-old. But after this, I recognize, you know, how many of these parents have also been through trauma? Did they have any support next to them saying, hey, here's all these emotions to these really upsetting things, here's how we handle them. And most likely they didn't. And does it excuse the choices they make? No. However, my job now is to go alongside them and to just say, hey, I see that you guys are struggling with this thing. Here's some tools and here's some resources. Here's how I can help you. We're the answer. People, loving each other, being together, living life with each other. Setting aside our own ideas of how a person should act and be a support for someone who has no clue how to process the world around them because their brain is telling them to run and hide or to fight. In John 15:12, it says, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. In Colossians 3:12-14, it says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. In 1 Peter 4:10, it says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. God is so gracious with us. He is constantly forgiving us, and we need to extend that same grace to the people around us. So many times I get frustrated. I get road rage. Not gonna lie. I'm driving in my car. I'm yelling at people. I go to the grocery store, and someone is texting on their phone, or I'm annoyed that their kid is screaming, or they're not moving fast enough. I have no clue what's going on in that person's life. And in those moments, even if I can't be a long-term support system, in those moments I need to pause and I need to extend grace. I can jump in and say, hey, do you need help? Or, hey, I see that your kid is really upset. Is there anything I can do to help you? Like, just extend a moment of grace. I have a video that we're going to watch from the Empathy Project that does a good example. Good job of showing this. Let me get out of the way. Thank you. Sure. Overwhelmed with grading, school paperwork, and graduate school. Family car was stolen from the driveway last night. Had to wear the same clothes 2 days in a row. People will make fun of me. Physically abused by family member, claims she fell. Daughter diagnosed with an eating disorder. Husband just lost his job. Just learned family is moving out. Received text threats to beat her up after school. Father was drunk again last night, never attends his games. If you had known of another person's experiences, what they see, what they hear, what they feel, would it change the way? What was that last part?
You
responded. Sorry, I couldn't see it. I feel like that video does a really good job of summing up my thoughts and feelings that I experienced through this trauma training. I don't know what's going on in these kids' homes. I have an idea, but I don't know. I don't know what they ate for dinner last night, if they ate. I don't know what their parents are going through. I don't know if their parents are trying to get out of their situation. I have no clue, and I need to respond with grace instead of getting aggravated or frustrated. I need to respond with love. So my challenge to you this week is to pause. Just take a pause before you respond to someone. Before something comes out of your mouth, think, is this breathing life into this person? Is this extending the grace? Is what I'm about to say going to extend the grace of God? How can I live life with the people next to me and show them the love and grace of Christ that I've been shown over and over from God? You may know someone in your life who's experienced trauma that you already know of. How can you support them? How can you continually show them grace and love? Maybe you're going through something that's traumatic, that's extremely stressful. Who can you reach out to that can be a support to talk to and to guide you through it in a healthy way? This is why I love strengthening families so much, because it's providing a space to teach these tools and to teach healthy emotion management. So maybe that's one way you could get involved. As you enter this week, just really be thinking, you know, is what I'm saying breathing life? Is how I'm acting towards someone breathing God's grace?